Our guest is joining us right now. We have for joining us on the phone line from the West Coast, but she's a Boston girl, I believe. We
yes.
have Christine Elise McCarthy, author of a new book, Bathing and the Single Girl. I believe there's a movie short as well that we had a chance to view. Hello, Christine. How are you?
Hello.
Are you there?
Yes. Can you not hear me?
Yeah, you're cutting in and out, but you are coming
shit.
In.
Oh, shit. Hold on.
Okay.
I have full bars here. Sorry, I'm on a cell phone.
Okay. No, we can hear you now.
Okay.
Remember, we are on live radio.
I know. Sorry about that swear.
Yeah. First and foremost, last time we talked with you, when we spoke with
yes.
you, we were talking about your food blog.
Yes.
Kind of a foodie.
Yep, I am a foodie.
Yeah, it seems like you're a big fan of macaroni and cheese.
I'm a big fan of, anything pasta, anything pizza. Yes.
Very cool. Well, that's not what we have you on here to talk about, but just wanted to kind of make the connection that we enjoyed talking with you before. We're going to look forward to kind of talking with you about your new book. Talk to us about the book that is out now, available on Amazon.
It is.
Being the first book, what was it like to put this together?
Well, that's hard to say it's kind of one of those things you do without knowing what you're getting into, so you don't have anything to compare it to. I did this short film of the same name, Bathing in the Single Girl, a couple of years ago, and I was lucky enough to do a little 10-minute comedy, and I did about 100 film festivals with it. And then somebody at the end of that run said, you know, this makes a great book. You should write a book based on the movie. So I did, and I wrote it pretty quickly. And as far as writing books go, I guess it could take a lifetime to write a book, you know?
Mm.
And so I wrote it, I think, fast for what it could have been, what it could have taken. And then here it is. Like 2 years later, it's out. So, yeah.
What was is this where did the story come from? Is this a true to life story? Is this a story that maybe somebody kind of pitched you and you thought that you'd be able to kind of spin a book from it?
Okay, so the short film was born because there's a comedy theater here in Hollywood called the Upright Citizens Brigade. There's one in New York as well, UCB
yep.
theaters. And somebody challenged me to write a short story to stand up and read in front of an audience there. They had a show at the time called Four Stories and a Cover. And I was like, okay, I'll write. And the format was a comic true life essay,
right.
2,000 words or less. And so I did. I wrote a comic true life essay. Oh, right. And my dog's not going to be spicy now. Dogs are almost as bad as kids. And so I did it, and it went well. And so then somebody saw me do it and said, that was really funny. You should make a short film out of it, which I did. And
yep.
that's linked at the book site, which is bathingbook.com or bathingandthesinglegirl.com. And so I made the short film, and that did really well. And then someone said, hey, that would be... And so to answer your question, the initial essay was true life. It was, you know, two little anecdotes that were true to my life. The novel is a 500-page, you know, tome that isn't all true life. It's fiction. It's a novel. So while those stories are buried in there, the initial stories from the short are in there and buried and still true, the bulk of the book is fiction. But all fiction is born or sourced largely from life experience, whether it's your own or your friends or, you know, a song you misheard and thought that the verse went this way, and you're like, what a great story that was, and then you realize that you got the lyrics wrong and
right.
don't fit it at all. So that kind of thing, all the ways we get stories in our head,
yep.
That's how the book was born.
Well, I gotta say that I thought that I enjoyed the video, and I think I really understood it because I think they could be fitted to whether it's a male or a female, if it's somebody who's coming off of a long relationship and you're getting back into the dating pool, and you're not sure what, you know, especially if you have somebody who's younger, who's interested in you, but yet, you know, a lot of the signals that they send don't seem to make sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's even worse if you've been on in a long relationship and then you've been in a long dry spell.
Right.
Then you're really out of the education pool as far as, you know, keeping your feet wet, so to speak, and knowing, having your navigating skills honed. So, yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, actually, because I think that people think the book is meant for women, and it actually isn't.
No.
I think that you might have to power through a chapter or two before you realize how male the humor ultimately is. It's pretty dirty. It's pretty it's pretty lowbrow humor. I think well-written, I hope, but yep. Still very sort of bar humor, which is it's not gender-specific. And the movie, it's easier to get somebody to sit down in a movie theater to see a 10-minute short than it is to get them to buy a book and sit there for however long it takes them to read a 470-page book. It's a bigger commitment to get from people, but I think that so far, if you look at Amazon and the reviews on Amazon, they're
fantastic. They're fantastic. You have one here. It says, "This book blew me away. It was well-written, evenly paced, and the characters were so vivid." You can't ask for anything more than that, can you?
No, and it's been consistent, and I'm grateful. And I actually don't... of course, I know a few, you know, four or five of those reviewers. Like, my mom's in there, I think, twice.
Nobody knows that. Shh.
It's easy to research. But the bulk of them I actually don't know. And I think the male-female breakdown of those reviews is more women than men so far.
Mm.
But the men that have written as positively as the men have. So I think, and I come from Boston, and I come from the old punk rock world in the 80s, early 80s Boston. My friends were mostly men. And I've had a very good old-fashioned male schooling in humor and being bawdy. So I think that the book really does appeal to men, I hope.
Yeah.
And I insist that it does, actually. So I guess only men can prove me wrong.
I believe my co-host Bob has a question. Bob?
Christine, I had the opportunity to just recently watch the movie, the 10 or 11 minute clip, and it was very interesting. And you talk about dry spells that you could possibly have when you fall out of a relationship. How do you think social media and the internet has changed that so much, whether there are dating clubs and all of this going on? Like, the bar scene is almost kind of secondary in today's world, it seems like. What's your opinion on that?
Okay, well, my opinion is going to be old-fashioned because I'm a lady. I graduated high school in the 80s, so I'm going to have a pre-internet experience of dating and relationships. And although I have been single post-internet, you know, that explosion of opportunity, if you want to call it that, I never really explored that. But it definitely has changed things. I know that in that giant dry spell that I actually really did have, that everybody was shocked that I wouldn't explore things through the internet. I've actually not ever been a real traditional dater myself, even before the internet, like just meeting a stranger or a relative or, you know, not a relative, but a relative stranger. Hey, cousin Jim. No, not an actual relative, but a relative, a relative stranger. And having to do that sort of gauntlet of dating, I've always seen that, even from my 20s. I always saw that as a weird audition process where you have three or four lunches or dinners to decide whether you want to engage in intimate encounters with somebody who has never really been honest with you yet because they're just trying to get you naked. So I never got that. Like, I'm not being honest. I'm afraid. That person's not being honest with me. He's afraid. Everyone, he's got an agenda. We know it. Not to be mean to men, but I think most people know what a male agenda typically entails. And now that women don't have the same agenda, too, on a certain level, I just never got that. Like four dinners to oral sex. You know, I always thought that in four dinners you have that much time to think of whether you want to go there with somebody, and I never got that. So I have been lucky enough to always have the men in my life that have meant something to me. Then people I met organically through work or through friends and got to know them a little bit before I was suddenly thrown into that decision process. So I think for me, the internet is even scarier. It seems to hasten that process even further and make it even, and you're digging even further deeply into the dating pool, not just somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody you know, but suddenly it's somebody who lives in a state away. And, you know, it just seems so detached and dangerous and weird. For me, this is me, though. I'm kind of old-fashioned, despite the fact that my book is dirty and crazy and going to freak some people out. So there. That's a long answer. It's probably not very cohesive.
Well, but. No, I understand where you're going with that, and I understand completely, but what I'm getting at is this new social media thing almost cuts to the chase and just has an interview with a person you don't even see before you even have the opportunity to go out on that first date. I think it cuts more to the chase.
Nobody has ever heard of them, and that's what makes it scarier. I think that typically, you know, you meet someone in a bar, you meet someone at a party or at work, somebody you know knows them. There's some sort of ultimate, you know, accountability, and it doesn't seem to, the internet just seems like an invitation to rape or something. I don't know. That's very dark and very extreme take on it. But it just seems like going to dinner with somebody that no one you know knows, and no one knows you're at dinner with them. I don't know. I sound like, you know, Mama Walton all of a sudden. I feel like a really old lady. But it just seems really, really vulnerable. And as a girl, it seems like a very vulnerable and scary world to delve into.
Well, if you look at today's world and the news reports that we hear and how quickly we hear things that happen with, you know, relationships that go bad or something, you know, I mean.
True. If I happened to go on an internet date and it went badly, I could tweet about it and have the entire world know in 10 seconds that my date's going badly.
So it's like Yelping a bad restaurant.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah, it actually could even be more quick than that, but that assumes that, you know, people have to go to Yelp to find out that, yeah, you know, what you think of a restaurant. But so I guess you're right. I never thought of that. There is sort of a new call for safety thing. You could text in the bathroom that you don't feel safe with your date, and I don't know. I just feel really old-fashioned all of a sudden.
You have to understand something. You're talking to two guys, who, I know you just celebrated a birthday recently.
I did. 49. My 49th.
Yeah, you know.
That's why I feel old.
You know, I graduated in the 80s. Bob, I think, might have graduated a little bit earlier than that. But we understand, and we're still trying to wrap our heads around social media, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, yeah, and some like Tumblr and all the other crazy, wacky things that are out there. I got to kind of go back to the little movie short and ask you, because you wrote that, you directed it, you had a lot. Because there was kind of a key thread through it that you had to be able to kind of keep a tempo as you're doing it all the way through. How did you keep the tempo all the way through in when you're kind of, because you're switching scenery and costumes and you're changing so rapidly throughout it as you're telling your story about, you know, dating the younger guy to this other guy. How was you able to do that?
Well, that's exactly how I did it, what you just said. That is, as I said earlier, it was written to be read in front of a live audience here in Hollywood, a little, like, you know, 5 or 10 minute piece that was written to be read in front of a live audience. I did that, and then somebody said, you know, that we should make a movie of that, and so I did. And then that became it's one thing to watch somebody in a tiny theater with, like, you know, 50 seats read something that's a very intimate experience. But watching a movie isn't intimate, ultimately, not the way a theater experience is. So the initial edits of the book, of the movie, sorry, my dogs are getting feisty again, and my phone's going to die, so I'm kind of in a weird, I'm tied to my charger, and my dog is going to be loud right near me. So there's not the same excitement or intimacy with a short film that there would be seeing somebody do it live in the theater. Mm. And so the first draft or cut of the movie was very static and very, wow, okay, that's a chick giving a 10-minute monologue, and it's not visual at all. I don't. She's not in the room with me, so I don't feel any intimacy, and there's no movement or anything interesting for my eyes to take in while my ears are taking in the rest of the information. So those costume changes and all those cuts that you see in the inserts of things, panties, glasses of wine, you know, the microphone, the conceit that the character in the movie is performing in a sort of a cabaret or, you know, sort of live theater environment is to try to accommodate what was already written and make it work visually. So I did it, I shot it in 5 days over about 10 months, one day in a month, and a couple months later, one day, and the five different days spread over 10 months. While I did it, shot it, cut it together, and then saw the spots in the movie where it just lagged and felt static and stagnant, and it needed some movement. And so what I do, well, what can I put in here? What sort of insert shot can I put in here that will keep the pace up?
Mm.
And if you watch the movie, no one's going to do this, but if somebody were to do it, some sort of film critic or student person, you'd notice that the inserts and stuff, they become more varied as the movie progresses, because I shot it and I'd watch it for like the first 3 minutes and go, I'm good with that, but at 3 minutes it starts to get boring. So then I begin to cut stuff in, and as the movie progresses, I become increasingly bored and cut more visual stuff in. So the early part has less varied visual. As the movie progresses, there's more varied visual. So I think, which reflects just me personally watching it, getting bored watching it. So I think now it does move, and I'm glad you think so too. I think it does have a little clip to it, and it is visual, and it wasn't written to be visual. So that was a whole hurdle to get over, and a whole sort of, it wasn't written to be visual, is the bottom line.
Okay.
So to create a visual thing from it was a challenge.
Okay. Again, we are speaking with Christine Elise McCarthy, and she is not only an actress, but she is also an author, as she has put out her first book called Bathing and the Single Girl. You can actually go to the book website, Bathing and spelled out, thesinglegirl.com, or just bathingbook.com to find out more about this, maybe. I believe that you can see the movie on there, too, can't you?
You can, for free. The movie's there free, and Where to Buy the Book is there, about me, my resume as an actress is there. It's all there.
What's the chances? Any chances of doing anything big, a book signing, coming back home and doing a book signing, maybe in Boston, anything, any
That's
plans for that?
That's a fantasy. That's totally a fantasy.
Okay.
And not a fantasy in like it will never come true fantasy, but a fantasy like one I mean to make come true.
Good.
And I'm from Roslindale. I'm an old school Boston girl. I went to Boston Latin, went to BU. Those are my old school. I have a huge, my family and friends, that's where they are, you know? So it'd be like it'd be like Madonna playing in Pontiac, Michigan or something for her first tour. It'd be like a great coup for me. So I just get to have people who want that to happen, if anyone does, to request their local bookstores, ask for the book, because the book isn't available in stores. It's only available
online
on BarnesandNoble.com and iTunes, iBooks, where the iTunes book thing is, and Amazon.com. And so it's only available online, though it's available as a paperback on Amazon. But I would love to do that. The book's only a month old. I intend to make that happen. I'm, pushing to bookstores now. And and Boston is my first choice. So.
Good. Well, being an actor and actress, and you not only doing TV but doing film. Did you watch the Oscars last night? Did you have a chance?
I did. I watched every minute, and I haven't for about a decade.
Really? What was intro? Give us your highlights of the evening.
My highlights is going to be. I sound so ignorant right now, but that beautiful girl from 12 Years a Slave in that blue dress.
Yeah.
The best supporting actress, whose name I don't know. I'm horrified. I didn't even see that movie.
Yep.
Her speech was the most moving of the night, I felt. She just seemed, she was eloquent, and she was so genuine, and I really enjoyed her being blown away by the experience as somebody who's fantasized about being in her shoes for most of my adult life. It's nice to see somebody experience the moment the way I want someone to experience it. I want someone to be blown away. I want someone to feel like their life is changing. I don't want to watch, I'm going to complain about the Golden Globes. I don't want to watch Emma Thompson, for example, who I think is talented and lovely, walk up on stage drunk with her shoes in one hand and a martini in the other and be stuffed and uncomfortable and be really sort of, I know everybody in the room because I've worked with them 5 times. It's a very jaded comfort that I can't relate to, even as an actor. It just seems arrogant and detached and is unappealing to me. So to watch somebody be genuine and heartfelt and to really feel it, I loved. The opposite performance last night I felt was actually Jennifer Lawrence gave some weirdly sort of, when she walked out, like, what are you laughing at?
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
Well, didn't she have a little bit? I mean, last year she kind of had the oops and falling on her face going up.
She fell down. And she fell down going in out of the car that last night too. But that wasn't what. If anyone was laughing last night when she walked on stage, in my opinion, it was probably because of Ellen's last joke.
Right.
So it just felt like, hey, the world's all about me. If something's happening, it's because I'm here, kind of moment. And I felt it. I feared that maybe Jennifer Lawrence has been maybe just gotten very famous very fast and maybe drinking her own Kool-Aid. You know,
shots have been fired.
There we go.
That's me being Boston. That's a little Boston honesty for you.
Hey, well, you know, speaking of Boston honesty, have you had a chance to see Mark and Donnie Wahlberg's little reality show, Wahlburgers? Have you seen that yet?
I saw the cop one. Didn't Donnie have a cop reality?
Yeah, he does have it. He does have a cop one. I haven't watched it personally. I've heard that it's been received well, but I'm more watching.
You're so polite. Go on.
The Wahlburgers one is kind of, it's got like the whole family. You got Paul, who's the chef, and the mother's involved. And it's kind of like the story, you know, these, you know, where the mother talks about, they go back and talk about, you know, them growing up in Dorchester and being poor. And, you know, now look at them, you know, where Mark's got the money, he's in L.A., and
yeah,
Donnie's in New York, and he's dating, you know, the chick from The View, Jenny McCarthy, and all that crap, you know?
Right.
It's not bad. It's okay.
I have not seen the show. I try to avoid reality television for the most part, unless it has some sort of socially redeemable thing. I as an actor, first of all, reality TV really has hurt. It dominates television.
Right.
So if it didn't exist, it'd be a lot more work for actors. It's just a practical complaint that I have. Secondly, I think that for the most part, reality TV largely pits women against women and just makes it sort of really exacerbates and exploits the worst stereotypes of women, like The Bachelorette or The Bachelor.
Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Fighting. Yes, those shows. I think that they rot people's souls, and I think they make women hate women, which it's not helpful in any community. And this is not. I mean, I'm guilty of a few. I happen to watch Pitbulls and Parolees, which is the one about Tia, this woman who runs a pit bull rescue site, and she hires prison parolees to work there. I think that I happen to love dogs, that she's got my heart there. But also, she's helping both dogs and men. Yep. Who are irredeemable in society's eyes, and she gives them a chance, and I think it's very...
Okay. Well, Christine, we have to run quickly. Website for folks to find your book and find out more about you.
Bathingbook.com. Everything's there. Bathingbook.com.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. All right.
That's another Monday Night Talk. Have
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.